Good afternoon, Sunshine Country. As I have been telling you today, we're going to have the opportunity and pleasure to visit with Mr. Brad Sherman, gubernatorial candidate for the state of Iowa. Mr. Sherman, good afternoon to you.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to get to visit with you and learn more about you and your campaign and your wife, is who is with us here. Carol, correct? All right. How's the campaign going,
Mr. Sherman? It's going great. We've been now, I think if you count today, we've been to 310 meetings across the state.
Wow.
We've already been to all 99 counties, obviously, 310 meetings. It's not hard to get 99. So that's old history, 99 counties, you know. So
yeah.
And so we've turned in our petition signatures. We're on the ballot. So, and we're all in on this thing.
So here's what I want to know. You've been, your primary occupation throughout your, I'm going to say your career, has been in the ministry, correct?
That's right.
You've been the pastor of a church in Coralville.
Is that correct?
And politics. I always say the two things you're not supposed to talk about, religion and politics. We're going to talk about both of them this afternoon. So tell me a little bit about your faith. When did you get into the ministry? And talk to me a little bit about that process.
Yeah. Well, I met my wife on August the 15th of 1974, same night I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ. And our lives changed at that point. And so we got married 5 months later because her dad wouldn't let us get married sooner. And so we started, almost immediately I started speaking and talking from time to time at different churches around the area, small churches out in the country. But then in 1981, and we went into ministry training, and then in 1981 we moved to Iowa City area. We started a church reaching out to university students at the University of Iowa, and we saw a lot of indoctrination taking place that what I would call as, or I would term it as something that would undermine the freedoms that we experience and enjoy in America. So that's one of the things that really pushed me into political activity. I believe our nation was founded on Christian principles. I believe Christian principles provide the best foundation for freedom for everybody, whether they're Christians or not. And so so that's one of the strong things I believe in. So our campaign slogan and what we've been doing for four decades is restoring the foundations of freedom. That's what we're trying to do. So that's the short version of what our vision is for Iowa, is to restore those foundational principles that our freedoms rest on.
You know, if you get your Bible open to the New Testament, read the first four chapters of the Gospels, just put in practice what Jesus taught us and life will be better.
Yeah.
It just will. There's just no doubt about it. So you made that transition. Tell me about you becoming involved in politics. What are some of the things you've done in your political career through those years?
Yeah, well, we started off, I've been inspired by people like David Barton and others that studied America's Christian history, but we started off getting involved in just the caucuses and learning America's history and applying it in that situation. I love the grassroots concept that we have here in Iowa. I think Iowa is a national standard when it comes to grassroots activism, and we need to keep that alive and keep it going. But over the years, we've worked with several presidential campaigns, whenever we could. We've done the seminars around the state teaching the founding principles of America and around the Midwest, other states as well. And then I've been a county chair in the county where I live, in Iowa County. And we've been to all the conventions and the delegate to all the conventions, all the way to the national level, including the National Platform Committee. And then, of course, we in 2022, I ran for state legislature and was elected there. It was a first time I ran for office like that. And so it was really interesting. That's when they redrew the lines, you know, and so we had new districts. And so I was thinking of running anyway. And then when they redrew the district lines, our district, new district that we ended up with, had no incumbent. So I jumped in early. I thought, well, maybe nobody else will jump in. You know, this will be easy if nobody jumps in. Well, we ended up with six people in our primary, the most in the entire state for a Republican primary. So we worked hard. We learned how to campaign. We reached people face-to-face as much as we could. And so we won that primary with 55.5%. The closest person had 13%. So that's what hard work does and face-to-face grassroots work.
So let's talk about a few issues. You know what? Before we do, you will be this evening, this Tuesday evening, March 17th, you're going to be in Emerson at the Community Center there in Emerson this evening speaking. You have an event there. What time does that start? Is it 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, yeah.
6 o'clock. Everyone's invited.
That's
right. Again, in Emerson, go to the community center and you can visit with Mr. Sherman, listen to you speak, get some questions answered, see where you fall on all these things.
We love to answer questions because what happens when we ask, when people ask questions, is we usually get to go into the issues deeper than you normally do when you're just talking.
Yeah.
And then sometimes questions come up when you don't know a whole lot about the issues. And when that happens, you learn something.
Absolutely.
And so we all need to learn things.
Absolutely.
So it's a very, very great time to sit down and answer questions and hear from people.
I would encourage people to show up tonight at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fantastic. Let's talk about a few issues. The legislative session is ongoing, and it seems as though, Mr. Sherman, that the last few years, coming from Des Moines, there have been a number of pieces of legislation geared or directed toward our public schools. You name it, top to bottom. One of the ones that really garnered a lot of attention was school vouchers or educational savings accounts, depending on what side of your aisle of the on is what you call that. What are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about ESA?
Well, I do believe that money should follow the child. I was supportive of that initiative. You know, there's two attitudes out there. Like I hear the opponent that will be in November, most likely, Rob saying, I hear him talking about how you shouldn't use public money for private schools. Well, that shows a complete different attitude because I don't think there is such a thing as public money. It's the people's money that the government is supposed to manage properly. And so that becomes another issue. But when it comes to the public schools, you know, the whole idea of competition comes into play. In business, if we have competition, the price of whatever the product or the service is, if there's competition, the quality goes up, the price goes down. But if we have no competition, the quality always goes down, the price goes up. And I think that's true in business. It's also true in schools. So there's a competition issue. And, you know, I know I've talked to some school districts around the state and school board members who are doing an excellent job managing their finances and doing a really good job. There's some really good ones out there. But there's some bad examples out there as well. And, you know, like I heard of one superintendent that gets a $400 a month clothing budget. Another superintendent gets $400,000 a year. You know, the number of administrators in some districts are off the chart. And, you know, and then we have woke ideology, you know, and DEI and CRT being taught.
Mm-hmm.
So these issues are going on. So there are a lot of things to consider there. But this issue of ESA's educational savings account, I think it has a built-in accountability system, you know, because the parents never get this money directly in their hands. They apply and it's managed through an organization, and they apply to the state, and it goes to tuition, what have you, and it's only about one-third of the actual total amount of money that is spent per student per year in Iowa. So there are a lot of good things to it. I think it's going to cause people to sharpen their pencils.
Do you think there should be more oversight to that money? Meaning when it goes, if you want to call it an ESA, if you want to call it a voucher, meaning current public schools have to account for dollars. They have to meet certain standards through assessments. Do you feel that there should be that same level of oversight with the money going to private schools as to public schools? Because at this point, so I'm a small government, low tax person.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. This is no secret to anyone. I do want to know where my tax dollars are going and what they're going to. And I don't feel, me speaking, that there's proper oversight with those. Would you be in favor of maybe having more oversight over those programs going to private schools?
Well, first, I'd like to look into see of examples where it's needed. I think I just mentioned that I believe oversight is built into this program because there are only certain things this money can be spent for, and it gets applied for, and then it gets sent directly from the state to the vendor. Like if it's tuition money, it goes for tuition. If it's for books or curriculum materials, it goes to that. And so that has a built-in oversight system. Now, if that's being abused in some way, and you know how people are, sometimes they're always good at finding ways to get around the rules.
That's the truth.
And I don't think any amount of legislating can fix that problem. But nevertheless, I think it has a built-in accountability. And when you come to and I've heard this issue before.
Yeah.
And so I think there's accountability that's, it implies that somehow public schools have accountability. And there's a lot of a lack of accountability in public schools as well. So I think that question applies to both sides of this issue.
Okay. Let's continue down the road here. Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about our taxes. Property taxes is one that we've talked about a whole lot here in the state of Iowa, and I think the system needs to have a pretty significant revamp, in my opinion. I know I'm throwing my opinion out there a lot, but I just personally, I think it should. Where do you come down on that? Do you like the idea of capping property tax, having a set level for property taxes, or where do you fall on that whole property tax debate?
Well, there's three versions in the legislature right now, one from the House, one from the Senate, and then the governor's office has one as well.
Yeah.
And I've got a sheet in my files that has three columns and kind of compares them all,
right,
and it deserves a lot more study. But I haven't seen anything yet that I think is really game changer in these three plans. Maybe there's some good stuff. Like I say, we'll have to look at it more. But I think property taxes definitely need to be lowered. The problem that we have in Des Moines, when you make laws in Des Moines and you apply it across the state, it's a one-size-fits-all deal usually.
Mm-hmm.
And so that usually ends up helping one situation but hurting another situation.
Right, right.
And so that's a real problem to overcome. So I'm not sure how the legislation needs to be tweaked. We'll see what they come up with. But I think property tax, one of the big things we can do for property tax is to create transparency. And so I'm advocating for a plan that I'm hearing this candidate for auditor, Abby Moss, speak of, which is a uniform software system for all the different taxing entities to be on so that we have some transparency.
Yeah.
Right now, software systems don't speak with one another. There's all kinds of different ones being used in the taxing entities, and the result of that is just a confusion. To do an audit, it's almost impossible. It takes years to get it done.
So I think there is an opportunity for some real efficiencies in those systems you're
exactly
talking about.
So if we had transparency, we would see a lot of things get fixed.
Okay. So one of the things that you hear a lot about if you hop online, especially mention the potential opponent in November, would be Rob San, the current auditor. One of the things I've seen many times from Mr. San talk about is a $900 to $1 billion deficit in our budget. Again, I told you that I'm small government, small tax, but also that seems fiscally irresponsible to me to continue to have a near $1 billion deficit with our state every year. What do you say about the budget?
Well, that was planned for, first off. I mean, we had a surplus in the state. We dug out of a deep hole the Democrats got us in under check cover, what have you. We still got a loan we're paying off as a state for the deep hole we dug into. So we've dug out of that, and we've gotten on top of things, and now we have surpluses. Now, when you have a surplus, people start asking, well, why are you keeping the money? Why doesn't that money go back to the people? Well, that's exactly what happened. Is we cut taxes, what have you. Well, cutting taxes, we knew, would actually reduce the revenue. And so that's what we're seeing right now. This was no surprise.
Okay.
So, but the issue is, will cutting taxes end up stimulating the economy, and as a result, create more revenue over time? So that's the big question. It's called the Laffer curve for those that, you know, for economy principle people. But so you can't cut it too much, or you cut your revenue. If you cut a little bit, you stimulate the economy, put the money back in people's hands, and we start producing more revenue. So that's what we got to watch for. But again, we get back to this whole issue of transparency and auditing. You know, if we had a real auditor, we wouldn't even need DOGE, if you stop and think about it. You know, so this auditing system needs to be revamped, and we need to get some real transparency in our government. And again, I think cutting spending and cutting fraud, you know, I don't think we've got fraud on the level of what we heard about in Minneapolis. At least I hope not.
That would be a challenge to be at that level, that's for
but
sure.
But it would be naive to think that we don't have any of that, fraud or waste going on. I think it's there. But this transparency issue is huge.
So let's talk about an issue that's it's been debated a lot right here in Montgomery County. Would be carbon pipelines, eminent domain within our county. In fact, we have on the west side of Montgomery County, where we're sitting today, and on the south side, potential two corridors for that carbon capture pipeline. So, number one, how do you feel about the carbon capture pipeline? And number two, eminent domain is the one that has really rubbed many people the wrong way. So talk to me a little bit about that issue. It's not an easy issue either, by the way.
Well, first off, eminent domain. We'll just hit that one first. Eminent domain for a private company who's not a common carrier for a product that's not a public utility should never, ever get to use eminent domain. That's just a bottom principle. Property rights are a fundamental principle provided in our Declaration of Independence. and the Constitution that we have. So it should be just that simple, but sometimes things are so simple you need a lawyer to misunderstand it. So that's my opinion on that. But there are many other issues to that. The carbon capture pipeline is not your normal pipeline. It's much more dangerous.
Yeah.
If it would ever rupture, it has a potential to smother life out wherever that cloud of fog goes that just lies on the ground. And then you come to the whole CO2 issue itself. I've been saying around the state, I've been saying it out loud, CO2 does not hurt our atmosphere. And this is the whole premise behind this, that somehow we need to capture CO2 because it's destroying our planet. If we don't have a good carbon credit score, then California won't buy our ethanol. And it just goes on from there, and it's all based on a false premise. You know, I had a top scientist from one of our state universities told me, and he leaned in close and he kind of whispered it because he didn't want anybody to hear him.
Yeah.
He said, there's nothing humans can do to create enough CO2 that's going to hurt our atmosphere. He said, but I can't say that or I would lose my job. So this is a problem when you can't speak the truth in public without fear of losing your job. You know, we never will solve the problems that we're facing in our culture if we can't speak truth mm-hmm. and bring it out in the open without fear.
Boy, that's the truth. So one of the things I heard in the whole debate about, you know, eminent domain, the utility commission, I'm trying to remember that at the moment, but the UAC?
Is that IUC.
The IUC, there yeah. we go, was that it might make it difficult in the future to use eminent domain for a legit project. My position on that, eminent domain should be difficult to use.
Absolutely.
I mean, it should be a very difficult route to go because it's not, and whatever the case, I'm not saying at some point there's not a need for it, but it shouldn't be just something that is easily accessible to anyone because then you're creating real problems.
Well, what you just said describes my position perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm sure you've heard a lot about that issue.
Oh, yeah.
Again, we are visiting with Brad Sherman. Who is a candidate for governor on the Republican side. The primary is when, Mr. Sherman?
June the 2nd.
June 2nd.
And, of course, there's early voting usually before that. So yeah. Something to start thinking about.
So there was another issue that just – and this was early on in the legislative session. There was a proposed bill, May, I don't know where it's at the moment, about the potential of stripping home rule from counties for wind energy, in particular, and solar. Montgomery County came out with a pretty strong – ordinance on wind energy would make it very difficult to build wind farms in Montgomery County.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Republican congressman that had floated the idea of stripping that home rule and bringing it to Des Moines to unify the code across the state, which I'm vehemently opposed to. I don't think it's right for that to be something that is unified at the state level. I think counties should have input in that. How do you feel about that, and are you familiar with that piece of legislation?
I am. I haven't read it in detail, but I'm aware of it, and I know what it really wants to do. And I'm, again, in agreement with what you said. I am. We need local rule, particularly for wind farms. This goes back to the whole green energy concept.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of windmills, no pun intended. But
I'm going to save that one, Mr. Sherman. I'm going to put that in.
But I'm also not a big fan of the solar panels either. They're covering up a lot of productive farmland, and then there's a lot of destruction. If you want to think, if you're concerned about the destruction of our environment,
yeah.
then the mining that it takes to create these solar panels is very destructive to the environment, and the amount of, if you want to call it, dirty energy that it takes to build a windmill never gets paid back by the clean energy they produce. And so the wind doesn't blow all the time, the sun doesn't shine all the time, so you have to have a backup system for it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why electricity prices have not gone down at all.
Yeah.
In fact, they just keep going up. So what I would like to see, and this is not something I can just get elected and go do, but it's certainly something we can work toward, and maybe we could have it done faster than we might realize, and that's to establish a network of small modular reactors around our state. There are new designs of nuclear reactors that burn the spent fuel that we've used in the old style,
mm-hmm.
and they don't use water for cooling, and they're small, and we had a decentralized network of these things to produce power. They run 24/7, 365. We wouldn't need solar. We wouldn't need wind. And it'd be the cleanest, cheapest energy we've ever had in our state.
There is no form of energy that is greener or more safe than nuclear energy.
I believe that.
That is the truth. It's statistically proving. And I know people go back to Three Mile Island and all the 70s. That is not the case with the reactors you're talking to. There is a massive market available there, and it is and it provides the baseload energy that we need. Everything else, we can have little, you know, ancillary forms of energy, but that can provide the baseload energy that we need to run our growing energy demand.
And we've been doing this for years. We've got aircraft carriers and submarines that run on small nuclear plants like that.
Yep.
And we can do this.
Yeah.
We can do it. And, you know, there are some federal hurdles to overcome, I think, as well. But there's even a nuclear waste disposal fund that's available out there. And if we were able to take that nuclear waste that's being stored in different places, that could release a lot of revenue for the state. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's I would like to see Iowa lead in that.
I think Iowa needs to lead in a number of those categories, I think, Mr. Schultz. Let's talk about farming. Speaking of lead, I think there's no better state, that, in my opinion, anywhere that does farming better than Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Are there pieces of legislation? I know there's one that's working its way through our legislature currently. I think it may have passed, actually. I need to have that. I'm not well prepared, Mr. Sherman. I don't have that in front of me. But, again, a positive piece of legislation, I think, for our farmers. But what can we do to help our farmers maybe stabilize some of those markets that are kind of crazy right now? Some of them way up. Beef prices are through the roof. Input prices and for your row crops and your, you know, corn and beans, man, it's expensive to get an acre of corn and beans in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do to help our farmers?
Yeah, it's a big issue, and I know I've talked to several farmers on this. I got a brother that farms a lot of land as well. And, you know, the input costs are the biggest problem. And then, of course, you know, finding markets and keeping prices up. But, you know, I've had farmers tell me that we have overproduction. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem. So maybe we need to get back to looking at CRP-type land and managing our production. Looking into why our input costs keep getting higher and higher, you know, and it gets back to the whole issue of just a few big companies that control everything. And I think I've talked to a lot of farmers that feel like that's a big part of the problem. You know, we have, you know, if there's a monopoly of anything, it, like I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, it always creates a higher price with a lower quality. So if we have monopolies that existing or too much concentration or centralization of power and control, it always turns out bad for the little guy.
Yeah.
And it decentralizes power. So I believe strongly in the whole concept of decentralization in just about every area. There's a few cases maybe where that doesn't apply, but if we can decentralize these things, and then I think getting back to healing our soil,
mm-hmm.
I think I don't know that this is for everybody, and we certainly can't force or shouldn't force anything on anybody, but in this regard, but healing our soil and getting it, building our soil back and regenerating it so it's not basically scorched by chemicals, and our soil could become a sponge that holds water, and we've got groundwater problems, and a lot of it's because our rain runs off right away.
Yeah.
But if you got healthy soil, it holds it like a sponge, lets it soak in, prevents flooding. There's all kinds of advantages to that style of farming, and a lot of people are looking into that. I've been hearing a lot of people talk about it. So that's what I'm hearing out there.
Yeah, okay. What do you say and what do you make of the cancer rates in Iowa? This is something that is not – I mean, we're number two in the nation, I think, mm-hmm. for cancer rates increasing. A lot of states are declining. We're increasing. I do know that we have and I don't know what you could ever do about it, to be honest with you, but if not the highest, among the highest rates of radon in the – I mean, mm-hmm. all of our basements – not all. The vast majority of our basements have – radon in them, but there's also nitrate levels that people are concerned about. A lot of, I think, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We're number two in the nation. What do you make of our cancer rates? Are there things that we can do to help maybe address that, or at least look at it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's lots of kinds of cancer.
Yes.
And like radon, for instance, that's you in Iowa. I think we can make testing a lot more easy and available, and that usually causes lung cancer, radon does.
Yeah.
But then there's other kinds of cancers as well. Early testing is going to help as well. But whatever's causing it, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma has been tagged on glyphosate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not the scientist. I didn't do the studies. But I do think there's one thing that we need to do. We need to get independent, completely neutral organizations doing studies, independent, maybe more than one independent organization, who can come up with some very definitive – So answers to this problem. You can't solve the answer to a problem if you if you don't know what the problem is.
Right. Well, you have to identify the problem, and to your point earlier, you have to talk about it.
Yeah.
You have to be able to talk about these things and what the problem is and the best way to go about addressing it. I think, to your point earlier as well, about the soil, taking care of our soil, taking care of runoff, and a lot of these things could go a long way with some of those issues, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
It's easy to talk about it. It's hard to do it.
Well, another thing I think we could do is relax regulations so that farmers that want to have a small farm and grow, you know, more like a truck patch type farming can sell their products and even their beef or other meat products to their neighbors,
yeah.
or to their communities without all these regulations that prevent them or even sometimes prosecute them for doing so if they do so inadvertently. So that's just grow the food that we eat, good, healthy food, and that's the food we eat. We import, heard someone say this, I don't have the statistics, but heard someone say that we import 90% of the food that we eat in Iowa. Well, we're supposed to be producing the food to the world. Why is it we import 90% of our food? You know, so the processed foods, that's possibly another issue when it comes to the cancer rates as well.
Oh, I think it's absolutely part
yeah.
of it. Highly processed foods are awful for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they are. So,
yeah.
Brad Sherman with me. And Carol Sherman as well, hanging out here in the studio with us. So, Mr. Sherman, it is a pleasure to visit with you. Again, you will be in Emerson tonight at the Emerson Community Building. 6 o'clock is when your event starts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long you're going to be there, but go and show up and ask questions and get your answers.
Yeah, well,
I think, like you said, you like to talk to people.
We do. And so we welcome the questions and welcome the conversation.
Okay, so I'm not quite done yet. So when you're not out on the campaign trail, or at church on Sunday, what do you do for fun? What are your hobbies?
Well, I've made this comment often. I'm a hobby gunsmith. I'm a big Second Amendment supporter.
Oh, let's talk about that amendment.
And,
yeah.
And so I, you know, my wife and I both do competitive shooting, the cowboy action shooting, if you're familiar with that. We've been doing that for 25 years or so. And so
I know a world champ in the cowboy action shooting, as a matter of fact, right here locally.
Who's that?
James Norris is his name.
I know James Norris.
Yeah.
Captain Midnight.
Yeah. Last time I think he won a world championship, he came in to visit with me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so. We know him.
Oh, yeah.
We know him. We've shot with him. Saw him not too long ago up in Erling, Iowa.
He puts a lot of work into that. I mean, it's pretty
remarkable. Yeah, well, he's very, very good, I'll tell you. Yeah, yeah, he is. But we do that. And so when we got involved in that, of course, we always like to tweak our guns and make them work smoothly. But I got interested in single action revolvers, and I like to do machining work. I have a lathe and milling machine in my shop, and a heat treat oven. So I build my own cylinders and convert single action revolvers to big bore 5-shot instead of a smaller bore 6-shot. You know, so
that's pretty technical stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's I've got a whole lot of paperweights that look like cylinders, and then finally I figured out how to do it. You know.
Trial and error, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, that's what I enjoy doing. I do that. And, of course, you know, it's just nice to relax once in a while. But we've been super busy on this campaign. But, you know, we're doing this because I truly believe in restoring the foundations of our freedom. And this is not about me and a career or something I want to do. This is about my grandchildren and their children and what the future is going to be all about. So,
how many grandchildren do you have?
I have 13 grandchildren, 4 children, 13 grandchildren.
Are they Iowans or have they migrated elsewhere?
Nope. They're all right here in Iowa.
That makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, okay. So when you, Mr. Sherman, you get up and you are thinking about the day and you're looking forward to the day and you're saying your morning prayers, where do you land out in the Bible? Is there a verse that gives you hope, gives you encouragement? Where do you land at?
Well, they all do.
Yes.
There's a lot of good ones. You know, you just read through the Bible, and every day there's something that find encouragement. But I'll just tie it to the campaign. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And so in that word, in the original language, that word church was the word ecclesia. And it was a secular term.
Mm-hmm.
It referred to the governing body of the cities that existed back in those days, even earlier, back to the Greek city-states. And so that governing body term was very important there. And the word gates, the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Gates is another governing term because that scripture, you know, the elders of the city used to sit in the gates in the Old Testament days, and they would govern who came in, who went out. They controlled commerce and that sort of thing. And so really, I gave you my loose translation of that that might apply today is that Jesus said, I'm going to build my governing body, and the governing body of hell is not going to prevail against it. And so I think for too long, Christians have thought that somehow government was not something we should be involved in. And, you know, I promote Christian values as a basis for American form of government, not because I ever want to force anybody to be Christian. I certainly don't. If we did that, we wouldn't be Christians anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do believe Christian values is what this nation was founded upon, and that those values provide the most freedom for everyone, regardless of whether they ever become a Christian or not. And so, you know, I think of a quote by a Noah Webster. He said, there's no truth more evident to my mind than that the Christian religion must be the basis of any government intending to secure the rights and the privileges of a free people. And so that's one of the ones that sticks in my mind and from all the different seminars I've done to try to help people understand these things.
Yeah, very good. If you want to talk to Mr. Sherman and talk more about that or any of the other issues we touched on, maybe we left something out. I don't know. If they have an issue they want to talk about, you'd be happy to visit with them about it.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me, Mr. Sherman, if you don't know, you'll say, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot I don't know. You know,
I appreciate that of people, to be honest with you. Instead of someone just trying to pull my leg, I would rather someone say, I don't know. I'll figure that out. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So anything else we need to talk about? What's the rest of the – where's next on the campaign trail? Going to be in Emerson tonight?
Emerson tonight. Then we're headed home after that. Tomorrow we're headed home. We're going to spend the night in the area. We dropped off our trailer that we pull at a friend's house and during those high winds.
Yes.
And so we couldn't pull that thing. So we're going to go back and get that and head home. And then from there, I have to take a look at the calendar and see.
Yeah. You're counting your very good. It is nice to meet you. Thank you for stopping by. It's been a real pleasure to visit with you. Nice to meet you as well, Carol. I know who runs the show. And my wife walked in here just a minute ago so that you can meet her, and that's going to be the same case there as well. So it is nice to meet you. Nice to visit with you. It's been a real pleasure. So hope you have a wonderful time. Again, I want to invite people to go to Emerson Community Building at 6 o'clock tonight, and you would love to visit with them.
That's great.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and make it a great day. It's a real pleasure to visit with you.
It's time for the Pure American Country Radio Minute, brought to you by Heinlein Home Furnishings, with a great selection of furniture, flooring, bedding, and more, with locations in Shenandoah, Maryville, and Harlan. Now, here's today's Pure American Country Radio Minute.
Well, we got a St. Patrick's Day baby in the house on today's Pure American Country Radio Minute. I'm Bill Cody. This date, 1955, songwriter Paul Overstreet, National Songwriter Hall of Famer, I add, was born. And if you've ever wondered why so many country songs feel like they came from the same honest place, Paul is a big part of that. He wasn't just a hit maker, he was a tone setter. He co-wrote Forever and Ever, Amen, helped shape Love Can Build a Bridge. Wrote or co-wrote 27 top 10 country songs, a long list of hits that reads like a greatest hit CD for the whole format. Here's the jaw-dropper. He was named BMI Songwriter of the Year 5 straight years, 87 through 91, every year. That kind of run doesn't happen by accident. It happens when your songs don't just chart. They touch people's lives. I'm Bill Cody. That's your Pure American Country Radio Minute.
Pure American Insurance, Dave Davis here. You want to save money on your insurance needs? No more excuses. In the time it takes to sing 4 verses of our national anthem, Pure American Insurance shops over 30 leading insurance brands to uncover the best coverage at the best price. Visit PureAmericanInsurance.com or call 800-541-7161. More choices, better rates. 800-541-7161.
Staples presents That Was Easy.
So I own a coffee shop, and I wanted to label everything with our logo.
That's ambitious.
Cups, boxes, bags.
Ooh, that'll add up.
Not at all, because right now, Staples prints custom labels for 30% off.
30% off? That's shockingly affordable branding.
Yep, now our logo and URL are seen all over town.
Brand your business for less at Staples.
That was easy.
Shop Staples in-store, online, or in the app by 442 Unlock. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for details.
It's tax return season, and there's no better time to freshen up your home. Whether you're looking for something traditional or the latest on-trend styles, check out Heinlein Home Furnishings. With sofas starting at $399 and reclining sofas as low as $699, Heinlein's has something for every budget. Super soft, chunky corduroy fabrics and the latest stain-resistant performance fabrics, allowing any family to have lighter colors that are easy cleaning and durable. 12 months, no interest with approved credit, and we also offer no credit needed financing to qualify. Heinlein Home Furnishings, Maryville, Missouri, Hardin, and Shenandoah, Iowa. Open late on Thursdays.
Thank Heinlein Home Furnishings for bringing you the Pure American Country Radio Minute here on Country Sunshine Radio. Heinlein Home Furnishings, a locally owned business with national business relations to give you the best deals and best selection. Check them out in Shenandoah, Maryville, and Harlan, or online at HeinleinHomeFurnishings.com.
With a wide variety of games and prizes, the Iowa Lottery gives you plenty of chances to become a win-yonaire. Living rich, your way. From an always a full tank of gas, Yanair. A dinner's on me, Yanair. A paid for the surprise girls trip, Yanair. Or just enjoy a whole lot of nothing, Yanair. No matter what, where, or how you choose to play, you can be a win-yonaire with the Iowa Lottery today.
Woohoo! You are the sunshine of my life. That's why I'll always be around, yeah.
Up to the Commander-in-Chief, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News. That bottom line from the U.S. intelligence chief after a senior intel official resigned over the fighting with Iran. Fox's Jared Halpern at the White House.
The director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, says President Trump is responsible for determining what is and is not an imminent threat, but sidestepped whether she offered a view about Iran before U.S. and Israeli airstrikes were launched. In a social media post, Gabbard says her office is responsible for helping to coordinate and integrate all intelligence to